Tonight on the Goblin's Corner, we review
Dread.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And part two of our Halloween review.
Dread.
Yeah.
I love this game.
You know, this may be the simplest game we've ever reviewed, but we've only reviewed one game, so.
This may be the simplest game we're going to review.
That is true.
It doesn't get much simpler than this.
But this is probably our favorite.
Nothing plays a ghost story game like this, as far as I'm concerned.
I love everything about this game. So tonight we're going to talk to you about Dread. What is it? How to play it? And so forth.
Okay, so first thing you're going to need is players.
Yep. So 3 to 5 people.
Yep.
Oh, you're going to need a Jenga set.
Yes. And probably 3 to 5 hours, depending on how awful of a person you feel like being.
Minutes sometimes. Minutes. I mean, it really depends on how good you are at playing Jenga in this case.
That is true.
First off, we probably should step back a little bit. Let's tell them what this game is about. Obviously, it's a horror game. What kind of horror game is it?
Well, honestly, there are expansions for it so that you can put it in different settings. Like, you can do historical horror, you can do survival horror, a slasher film,
sci-fi. Yeah, so there's different types of horror motifs that
cryptid
you can play
horror
with. But essentially, it's Jenga. It's horror Jenga.
Yes.
And we can't make it any simpler in the description of what it is.
Yep.
This is generally a one-shot. Most people play this. We've seen this at Chatticon a couple times,
yeah,
and other conventions as well. This is a great way. If you have a friend who's never gotten into gaming, let them play this because it requires some storytelling,
right?
And a Jenga set,
and that's all.
And that's about it. Yeah, I mean, and the rules, obviously.
Sure.
Okay, so it doesn't have any fixed setting. We have a Jenga tower. We have 3 to 5 players. We've got the adventure sheets and the character sheets set up.
Right.
What do we do? Let's make a character. So what do we do?
Okay, so tonight you're going to be playing, we're going to do a high school slasher flick, Friday the 13th style, right? We'll go with that. Why not?
Sure. So we assign, so the game master or the storyteller assigns kind of a theme for the evening.
Right. That's how the game starts. You have to know what story you're telling so that you can assign characters.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can draw characters, what have you. It doesn't.
There's lots of ways to, yeah,
sure.
Draw from a hat, or you can, everybody can do a kind of a group consensus.
Yeah.
But there's some way that here's the theme, and then what are some common characters from that theme?
Yep.
So a good example of that is you might be we'll go back to the high school horror, you might be the jock.
The nerd.
The
cheerleader, whatever.
The druggie.
No, yeah.
I'm going through everything from Breakfast Club.
Fair.
The slacker, the rich kid.
Yeah.
And you come up with, say, 12 questions.
But the important thing, other than the last question, the important thing is that these questions are loaded.
So let's describe a little bit about how these questions are loaded.
Okay. So you're playing the jock.
Okay.
If you're playing the jock, I'm going to say, despite all of the danger going on around you, why is it worth your energy to constantly do anything you can to irritate the nerd?
So these are questions that are deliberately set up to make sure that your players mess with each other.
In some cases, or to make sure that you set up scenarios. Like if you're playing the nerd, you can be like, so how are you going to ensure that you spend as much time with the cheerleader as possible? Or, you know, whatever, however you can manage to insinuate that the characters are going to be doing dumb, hazardous things despite what's going on. Because you're playing, in this scenario, right, you're playing a horror movie, and people do stupid things.
They make poor life choices throughout the horror movies. They go in deep into the woods. They have sex. They venture off alone.
Sure. They split the party.
Split the party. They do stupid stuff.
Yep.
So you come up with those stupid questions. And of course, the end question is, what's your name?
Yeah.
And that's it. Yep. It's 12 questions, some just leading questions for each character to come up with.
It doesn't even have to be 12, honestly. If it's a very stereotypical type, you know, slasher flick, right? You could probably
get away
nail
with
it down in like five.
Yeah. You get away with tropes.
Yep.
So it's very easy to set up. You ask some leading questions as a storyteller. You ask them their name. They write this stuff down on their character sheet, and then we start playing.
Yeah.
Storyteller starts in with setting the scene. So whatever that motif is, they start with that. And depending upon how you play, you can get in on the action immediately, or you can do some theatrical building to that.
Sure.
The mechanics are honestly stupid simple. I'll let you describe those.
Okay. You're the jock, right? You're breaking into the high school so that you can steal the test questions.
Okay.
So the first thing you're going to want to do is you're going to want to tear the door open.
Because you're the jock and that's what you...
Right. Yeah, you got to get in, right?
All right. To succeed on an action...
You have to pull a certain number of Jenga pieces. Well, you're the jock. You're super strong anyway. You spend all your time working out. That might only be one Jenga piece for you. Now, if it's the nerd who's trying to rip the door open as opposed to trying to pick the lock or do something with electronics, what have you, it might be three for him. There's no way he's going to do this under normal circumstances. Now, at the very start of the game, pulling three pieces isn't that difficult if you're decent at Jenga.
If you're not, you might die.
Everything is dangerous.
Yeah. And that's it. That's the game.
Yeah.
Essentially. So successes are determined if you pull a Jenga piece or multiple Jenga pieces and succeed, the action is performed. If you don't, you die. Often spectacularly.
Preferably spectacularly. Now, if there's no current reason for you to die, then basically the person telling the story puts that death in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And continues to tell the story.
So you're a dead man walking.
Yes, indeed.
I love this game so much. I love this game. It's so easy to play.
Now, if you're a terrible person, like maybe me.
Or me.
Or you. I might put that death in my pocket and just keep it. Just keep it. Sure. Oh, somebody's already died.
Because the player knows he's dying.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows he's dead.
Now the matter is when.
Right. But the fun thing is if you wait a couple of times and other people die, people tend to forget because the tension has built and that tower is getting more and more rickety. And then you're just like, and then the axe comes through the door straight into the head of the jock.
Yep.
Boom. You're dead. And now it's a shock to everybody because they've forgotten you're a dead man walking because I didn't kill you first. I prefer to, like I said, just keep it in my pocket and use it as a jump scare for all intents and purposes.
And the game goes down until the last person is standing and then they inevitably die as well.
When I've run it, the way I like to do it is you have a mission, right? You're here to steal the test and get out. If you successfully steal the test and get out, then congratulations. You're that guy. Or that lady. You're the last person who managed to walk out of this harrowing, just awful scenario.
You've successfully survived the horror encounter. You get to move on and live another day until the sequel.
Yeah, you're the two people that survived at the end of House on the Hill or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. But the other way you can do this is instead of playing it as a one shot, if multiple people survive and they haven't reached the goal yet and your time's up and everybody's got to go home, when you start the next time around, new people show up, right? Now you're the deputy who heard the noise.
So you could keep playing this multiple times.
Absolutely. Until the story ends and more people have died or more people survive. And it's fine. However it ends, just finish the story. Nobody wants to pause a horror movie and then never finish watching it.
Right.
And it's funny. I love this game. I despise horror movies, but this game amuses me to no end.
It's just, yeah, it's, that's the game.
Yeah.
We, not much of a review.
But we like it.
We like it.
It's easy to learn and easy to play.
Super fast to play. It can last 5 minutes if you've got shaky hands. It can last 3 hours if you're one of those bitter, determined people that play Jenga hardcore. And we know who you are. We've met you.
Oh, yes.
And there's ways to adapt this game even further. For example, you can do a shot after you pull.
Yeah.
So that the Jenga game goes even quicker and everybody dies much faster.
Yes. Shot Jenga is totally an easy way to make this more amusing. And it's a great way if you've got a dead man walking. Because once people are already a few shots in, and then you do the jump scare.
Oh, yeah. Then you really mess them up. I definitely recommend you go and get the game itself. Because the storylines and the thematics are built into the game. And that's part of the fun of this game. It's a great game to play. It's really easy.
Yeah.
You can introduce people to role-playing as a storyteller.
It's got some great suggestions also.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of horrible suggestions to really mess with people. So I definitely love this. I honestly, there's only one con that I would say is part of this. And the one con is if you've got shaky hands.
Yeah. Now, I will say this is not a fun or fair game to somebody who has mobility issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks. I don't know how to fix that, though.
You make them draw for other people.
Nice.
So that they then ruin everybody.
Oh, I do have a house rule. And that is, if you bump the table and knock over the Jenga tower, you're a dead man walking.
I love that.
It's only fair. Because if I've got a teetering Jenga tower and you accidentally bump the table, then now we have to reset the Jenga tower.
Yep.
Boo.
I would also say, and you can, if you want to make the game last longer, here's another pro tip. If the characters are really role-playing, they're getting into this game, they do something spectacular, reset the Jenga or add a couple of, or even just add a piece back.
Yeah. If somebody's got a brilliant idea that you just didn't see coming, 100%, I'm okay with actually just fully resetting it. Now, if somebody comes up with something a little sharp, sure. Okay. I'll take a piece off and put it back in some place to add some stability. I don't mind. Although that, depending on how steady the hands of the person telling the story is, that could be a little iffy in and of itself.
You may just give them like an extra life in that case.
Sure.
Maybe they've survived a death or something like that. But there's a lot of ways you can play it.
Oh, you know what you could do? You could give them a little token so that the next time they do a three-piece pull or a two-piece pull, they just hand in the token and pull one less.
Ah, that would work too. Yeah, yeah. That's a good house rule. I like that. So overall, this is our choice for day two of our Halloween week. We definitely think you should play this game. We like it. You'll like it. It's easy. It's fun.
Minimal setup.
Mess with your player characters. Some good storytelling. It's horror-based.
Yeah. And if your friends like slasher flicks or monster flicks, this is gold.
It's great at a party. This is great. We got one more review. We'll take a short break. This is a commercial break. If you guys would like to hear us review something like a product or service, or if you'd like us to cover something like a topic,
or if you'd like to sponsor an episode, we'd love to hear from you and have you contact us at info@goblinscorner.com.
So write to us, and maybe we'll talk to you. Maybe not. And we're back.
Welcome back.
Matt, do you like liches?
What's not to like?
Well, I mean, they're undead, they're nasty wizards. They cast spells.
They don't have to be wizards, sir.
Oh, they can be priests too. That's true.
Yes.
Yeah. Liches are great. They're awesome monsters. And our good friends
over at Eldritch Dream Games,
that's right, have given us a template
for how to become a lich in Pathfinder.
Specifically, this is a lich heritage that you can take. So let's talk a little bit about this lich heritage and what's involved. First off, a lich is defined as a spellcaster of notable power, attaining an elongated death and soon undeath while maintaining your mind through magical means. And then, of course, having some sort of phylactery.
Right.
Now, many are evil, but not all of them are evil. And this is a heritage set that lets you become a lich,
right,
which there's lots of there's a couple classes in 3.5 that inevitably you became one. So in D&D, it was a Dread Necromancer. You became, right, a lich eventually. And there's
the Wastes, you become the Dry Lich. Walker of the Wastes.
Walker in the Wastes lets you become a Dry Lich. You can also become a Grim Scion, which was the psionic way to become a lich.
Right.
But this is Pathfinder. This is straight up level 11 feat. Get a lich dedication. You get a ritual, and you become a lich. Just straight up, you're there.
Boom.
Let's talk a little bit about this ritual. Okay. So first off, you get the feat. You drink the juice. You say the magic words. Did you say the exact words?
Yes. You need to say the exact words.
You need to say the exact words. You die. You become a lich. Your alignment immediately shifts.
Well, that's because this is the shortcut.
Yes. So if you take the shortcut, you become evil.
Yes.
And that's what's involved with this. Now, I would say you can also, it can be deemed appropriate that you can do the non-evil version, in which case you don't need to do a vile sacrifice and various other things.
Right.
So the idea is you're either going to fast track it and become evil, or you're going to...
So here's an option that I would provide here for my players. If you're, say, a lawful character and your sacrifice is an execution, then I might would let that slide. Although there's still some questions there. I don't know. That's a tough call. I might would have to go, if you take the shortcut, you're evil.
Sure.
That's the choice you decided to make.
But there's an alternate way to do that. Anyhow,
yeah.
You do the ritual, you drink the juice, you say the exact words, your soul is ripped from your body, it's stuck into a phylactery, and then if you have a sacrifice, that sacrifice at this point dies, and you become a lich. So what happens when you become a lich? What do you get?
Well, first, you become undead.
You become undead, obviously.
And so you get part of the undead package there, right?
Yeah, so dark vision, you're healed by negative energy, you get immunities to death, disease, and so forth. You get some resistances.
Yeah.
So resistance to what? Cold, some physical resistance. You get rejuvenation. Tell us about rejuvenation.
Well, when you hit zero hit points, basically your soul goes to your phylactery, and then you can only be permanently destroyed if they destroy your phylactery. So your body regenerates, and a day later you pop out of your little necklace or urn or whatever it is.
Pissed off and ready to fight.
Yep.
Yeah, so standard lichdom, right? Everything that player characters have known and loved about fighting and destroying liches, in a nice little package that you get at feat 11, I believe. Now, that's not the only thing that we've been given with this. In addition to becoming a lich and being able to take that path, it is a dedication set. So that means you can build onto that with extra stuff you can purchase through feats. So one of which is you can get paralyzing touch.
Sure.
Which
that's
always
proper.
Fun. Yeah, it's proper.
Before you can do that, though, you have to get Hand of the Lich.
Yes, the Hand of the Lich. What does the Hand of the Lich let you do?
That's the first feat you have to take for any of the physical touch type feats that you get from here on out. It's the prerequisite for all those. What you get is your hand, your unarmed attack deals negative damage, and that negative damage is based off your level. So it's like a D8 for every so many levels.
Mm-hmm. You get there's another feat that lets you drain from your phylactery once per day to cast the highest spell you know, which is always nice. So if you've got to cast Time Stop, cast some Time Stop.
Yep, sometimes that's what you got to do.
Sometimes you got to do that. You can get all kinds of stuff, from Frightful Presence to
Blaspheming Whispers.
Yeah, making them crazy. Frigid Grasp, which does cold damage. You can get a Freezing Touch. You can siphon the life from people, so you actually regain hit points.
You should.
Yeah, and you also can get greater resistances to damage and so forth. You can get an aura. You can get all sorts of different types of...
The Woodland Lich.
Tell us about the Woodland Lich. That's an interesting one.
The Woodland Lich would be most likely, if you're a Druid Lich, although not specifically, what you do is, instead of having a phylactery, you actually end up dedicating your spirit to some beautiful natural setting that's important. A grove, a great tree, you know, any, it could be a waterfall, whatever, just something very important to you that also happens to be beautiful. And your phylactery cannot be destroyed because this place is basically your phylactery. So unless they burn down the grove, unless they destroy the waterfall or reroute the stream or whatever, you can always come back from this area.
Which makes it even more of a...
pain in the butt to kill you?
Sure.
Yes.
So let's talk about playing using Lich Heritage.
Lich. Sure. All right. I'm for it. If I were playing an evil campaign, I would definitely have to go in on the Lich option. Although, you know, it depends on how much religion you're going to be dealing with. Maybe you dodge major temples and stuff.
Sure. I think this would be also a great build for NPCs as well, because it's something that you can easily make a custom-built Lich with different types of chassis to kind of swap out different abilities and such.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That would be a lot of fun. That way... one of the things it does prevent, if you're in a place that is likely to have more than one Lich, is it prevents them from being cut-and-paste Liches.
Sure.
Nobody wants a basic Lich.
No one wants a basic Lich, guys. Make yourself a custom Lich.
That's right.
Have a party of six Liches. That's what I want to see. An evil campaign with six Liches rolling in the town.
Pinstriped robes, maybe some... speed lines on them, flames on one side.
Which Lich? This Lich.
Yep.
One Lich, two Lich, red Lich, blue Lich.
Sure, why not?
We got it. We got them. Yeah, Lich for days is what I'm saying. So check them out. Where can this heritage be found?
So Eldritch Dream Games is on Drive-Thru RPG. It's on
itch.io.
Itch.io. It's Eldritch Dreams ./.
..
I'm terrible at that.
And of course, they have a Patreon. Go check them out. And you can find them on Twitter as well, at Eldritch Dreams.
That's how we found them. There you go.
So go get it.
Get all of it.
Go get the Lich Heritage Dedication. Check it out. Thanks for giving us this to review. Go play some Dread. That's all we got for today. Tomorrow, yet another horror game and some reviews. My name's Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye now.
The Goblin's Corner has been written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staples.
Music by D20.
This is a Subterranean production.